Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Like a Midas touch by the very first time, I make decisions with my wallet, not my mind. Too much money for one person to control. Ooh, audacity will not buy back your soul.
Hello and welcome to Too Much Money, the podcast that asks, does being a billionaire make you crazy or do you need to be crazy to be a billionaire? I'm Dori Shafrir and today we have a very special guest host. Welcome, Nick.
Hi, everybody. It's Nick Astor. I happen to be Joe Piazza's husband. And what can I say? It's an honor to be here. I don't get to do this very often.
You don't. It's really fun. Today is Joe's pub date, actually. The day that we are recording this is the pub date for her amazing, wonderful new novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. And so she is off doing all sorts of book publishing promotion things. And so Nick very kindly offered to step in and co-host today in Joe's place. So Nick, thank you again. Before we get started, please email us at toomuchmoneypodcast@gmail.com. with your thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, etc. Now, Nick, what are we talking about today?
Dori, well, first of all, thanks for that introduction. And I would be remiss not to to remind people to go out and check out Joe's book, Sicilian Inheritance. We got written up in the Times today. It's a terrific review. And you don't have to be a billionaire to enjoy it.
Great point. Great point, Nick.
But if you are a billionaire, you know, you'll enjoy it a billion times over. So buy a few extra copies.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're a billionaire, buy like 1,000 copies. Why not?
Love it. So that's a good use of money.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Oh, Dori, so, you know, I've been following along the show. And of course, Elon Musk comes up a lot as one of these archetypal rogue billionaires that does wild things with his money. But of course, there are many others out there as well. You know, have you ever looked up in the sky and seen a satellite?
You know, probably, but I don't think I would have like recognized what it was.
Oh, well, it's actually really cool. I mean, it's something that if you've got a decently dark sky, you sort of lie back for a while, look up at the sky, and you'll probably see one eventually. They're not that hard to spot. It looks a little like a shooting star, but they tend to move. They don't twinkle, first of all, and they move in sort of a consistent speed that's a little slower than an airplane might move, but they don't blink. And that's the main giveaway, that it's actually a satellite moving along over you.
What I'm hearing is that when I look into the sky and I see something that looks like it could be an alien invasion, it's probably satellites.
Most likely.
Okay. All right. Cool. Good to know.
You never know, but most likely.
You never know. Right.
So anyway, it's a funny thing, and it's very funny. Joe will tell you a story. Like when we were first dating, we had a night out when we sat in a hot tub, and I pointed out a satellite to her, and she'd never seen one before either, and she thought that was pretty cool. I don't know why that popped into my head. I'd forgotten that we had that
That's
moment.
That's very sweet.
I know. So they're up there, and there's a lot of them. I should have Googled the exact count, but there's thousands of satellites up there, more than you would imagine. So, okay. A couple nights ago, we were out pretty late, beautiful sky, dark sky. We look up and we see not one, but a string of 60 satellites, 60. Now, I didn't count them all, but I know that there were 60 because I know where this came from. But 60 satellites, like a string of pearls in the sky, from your perspective, it looks like it's maybe a couple inches long, but just all moving together in a line, very obvious, very bright, very strange, confusing, what the heck is going on up there kind of feeling when you see this.
Okay.
And I said, Joe, get out here. And she runs out and, what the heck is that? And I said, it's Elon Musk. He's at it again. And this is a thing that happens nowadays, you know, probably every couple weeks all around the world. And what these strings of lights are the release of groups of Starlink satellites. And Starlink is an offshoot of SpaceX. It's one of Elon Musk's companies. And what they are is a huge number of satellites. There's now something like 4,500 up there in the sky right now with a target of, I believe, 12,000. And it could be even higher than that eventually. And these thousands of satellites are circling the globe at a relatively low altitude, and they provide internet service around the world. And we can geek out on the technicalities of all of that if you want to, but just imagine thousands and thousands of these satellites up there. And the reason they're released in a string is because the 60 of them get launched at the same time. So a big rocket goes up, it opens up, it spits out 60 of these little guys that are about the size of a desk, maybe I don't know, 8 feet long or something like that. And they unfurl and they all come out in a row. And then eventually they separate and become, you know, a much longer string. So you no longer see them all packed together, but they're out there circling hundreds and thousands of different orbits around the globe.
Okay.
So, on the one hand, you know, this is kind of cool, actually, and it's one of these. When it comes to the subject matter of the show, you know, we like to sort of talk about some of the trivial things that people do with their money, arguably, there's a lot of practical benefits to this network of satellites.
Right.
Concept, the idea, and this is what happens, is it gives you a very high speed internet connection down on Earth. You can even be out in a boat somewhere. And the theory is that therefore people in remote areas who don't have easy access to fiber optic cable or whatever can have internet. So on the surface,
so a public good.
Yeah, I would say it is. There's some arguments towards some of the downsides of it. And, you know, I guess as I thought about, you know, what would be the angle to talk about with this, you know, it's one of these things that conjures up to one of these debates where, you know, there are things that people could do with their money that, you know, perhaps stroke their ego. And I suppose there's a little bit of that involved in any big investment that somebody makes. Mm-hmm. But perhaps this is an example of, for the most part, a public good being created by somebody putting their money to something that's actually potentially solving a real problem.
Okay.
But of course, you could go down the rabbit hole a little bit, and there are some downsides. And then you have to ask the question of, you know, should global internet access be something that's controlled by one company or essentially practically one individual in this case? Or should it evolve in some manner that it becomes something more like a public utility? You know, and the internet is, you know, essentially a necessity nowadays, as you might think of as other utilities such as water or power or, you know, sewers and things like that. So, you know, why should internet necessarily be, controlled by some particular entity? So those are the kind of questions that you struggle with when you see it. At least that I find a little bit, you know, troubling when I see something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Before we take a break, do you know, like, what was the origin behind all this? Like, why did Elon Musk want to build this whole network?
Well, I think that two reasons. One, you know, it's an obvious extension of SpaceX. And I think that, you know, he has a fascination with outer space, as many people do, which is pretty cool. I mean,
right.
There are those who argue that money could be put to more practical use here on Earth. We had enough problems saying they do. You know, there's
could argue that.
There's this bizarre obsession with colonizing Mars, which is a total rabbit hole, and I think it's full of loony ideas. And I think that with regard to what happened, you know, part of the point is to how do you evolve SpaceX? How do you make that a more profitable company? And launching satellites is the obvious way to do it because satellites are expensive. Corporations, countries will hire SpaceX to launch satellites. Since the technology is matured and since they do a very good job of these launches, why not build a product into the whole system that could potentially be a profitable business unto itself and therefore raise money for SpaceX's future and ultimately this wacky colonized Mars project, which is probably where this goes.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, on that note, let's take a break and we will be right back.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right, we are back. We're learning so much about satellites, a thing that I had not really thought about. You know what, though? I will say, Nick, I feel like the most recent time I heard Starlink referenced was in the context of Burning Man.
Mm.
Because the people who are there have like their Starlink connection.
Yes, I'm sure they do. Which is funny because it brings up one of those fundamental questions that some of us ask, which is probably completely futile, and that's that isn't it nice that we can still go some places on the planet and not have internet access or not be able to make a phone call? And, you know, I still kind of relish that, but I'm probably a dying breed, and I think there's nothing we can do about it. It's going to be everywhere. You bring up Burning Man. When I first went to Burning Man, well, I went a couple of times years ago, and there was no such thing as a phone signal or anything. And
you were really just out there.
Yeah, that was part of the charm, actually.
Right.
You did all kinds of weird things. People would put notes into bicycles and deliver them, and somebody had a little service, and 3 days later you'd hear from somebody, and it was all kind of part of the, you know, mythology of the whole thing. And then I remember like the second time I went, somebody had actually set up some kind of Wi-Fi, and it was really, really weak, and you had to go to one particular place and huddle in a corner with your laptop, and it was super
light. Right, like the one tiny area where you'd get like one bar of service. Yeah.
And it was like a bunch of sad people that like couldn't unwind from work, and they were like hiding.
Right, you know, yes.
Get out of here, guys. What are you doing? And then since then, I think it's just a giant Instagram free-for-all. I mean, I don't know, I haven't been in years. But, you know, there's a tragedy in that, in a way.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I do wonder, like, what year was the tipping point? Because, you know, what you're describing is very different from what seems to be the case now. I've never been to Burning Man. I just see, you know, I see it on social media. I see it in the news. And it seems like everyone is connected to the internet. at all times.
The last time I went was 2010, and that was probably around when this was happening. Like, there were, you know, a couple places you could get some kind of signal. I think that was pre-Instagram. I don't remember when Instagram happened. It must have been 2015 or something like that. Man, a little before that. I don't know. We can look it up.
I mean, it is. It's like, it's an interesting thing to think about, because on the one hand, like, you have people like you and me who are, you know, relatively privileged and have had internet access like for a very long time. And so the idea of going somewhere like Burning Man, where you are, you can remove yourself, like the digital detox crowd is appealing. But then there's also people who have never had internet access who, and for them, something like Starlink, like, is an actual lifeline. So, totally. You know, I think like we lose something when you're able to be connected everywhere at all times, but also I think inarguably you gain something, you know, the world gains something as well, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's a little bit snooty of us to be like, oh, this is terrible that we have internet everywhere now. You know, there are ways to unwind. You just have to be a little bit more deliberate about
totally.
It.
Totally.
And you may have heard about, you know, this government program to provide rural bandwidth across the country, rural broadband across the country, which is extremely expensive. Something like Starlink could replace that for pennies on the dollar, because you're not physically laying fiber optic cables all over Kansas. You just, you know, mail people a thing, they stick it on their roof, and boom, they're in. So it potentially could save a ton of money. And then, of course, there's the obvious bonus, which is developing countries, where it becomes a leapfrog technology, where we've already seen this all across parts of Africa, where no one ever had a landline, but now everyone has a mobile phone. They've completely skipped that whole infrastructural development. Unnecessary waste of money. Just jump to the new technology.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting to think about, like, all these different aspects of it, for sure. Yeah.
So the little downside, if we must find it, I mean, there are radio astronomers who are not happy about this.
Oh. Okay. Tell me about the radio astronomer contingent.
Apparently, you know, what happens is these things are pretty close to Earth. They're like, I don't know what it is, 300 miles or something above our heads. And they're coming along with a fair amount of frequency.
Wait, sorry, stop. Can I stop you for 1 second? As someone who is not, I'm not super familiar with, like, the world of space.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird, but, like, it's, you say they're relatively close to Earth. They're 300 miles away.
That's close.
Okay.
Satellite.
This is what I'm wondering. Like, what is considered close? What is...
It's arguable. The exact definition of space is a little bit debatable, but 100 miles is roughly, you know, where space begins.
Okay. So they are in space, but they're not that deep into space, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
A typical communication satellite is in what's called geostationary orbit, which means that it sits on one point over the equator, and that's about 36,000 miles away. So that's a typical range for that type of satellite. And then there are a bunch of other orbits that are somewhere in between 36,000 miles and roughly 300 miles.
Okay. So they're very close.
Yeah. So these are really close satellites.
Okay. All right.
And because there's so many of them, and because they're so close, and because they're constantly beaming down the signal back and forth, apparently it plays all kinds of havoc with radio telescopes. And so
interesting.
You know, this is concerning enough that people in that field, you know, have a constant dialogue going on with Starlink, where they're trying to say, look, can you shut it off when it crosses point A to point B so that we can conduct our research and things like that. So there's, you know, there's a downside there. Regular optical telescopes can also be interfered with if you're sitting there looking at deep space and this thing suddenly comes across the screen.
Yeah.
There is the problem with general space debris, which is increasingly a problem. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of dead satellites out there. So far, we haven't had any disasters, but there have been some incidents, apparently. Some years back, when we had the space shuttle, a fleck of paint from something. Paint hit the windshield of the space shuttle, caused a dent, didn't cause any real damage, but is alarming enough that we have to try to keep track of all this stuff that's floating around out there.
Wow. And that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's human nature to think, oh, it's just infinite out there. Just throw it out.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it all adds up. You know, that was our attitude towards Earth, and we've made a mess of this planet. So
we know what happened there.
Be a little bit more mindful.
Yeah.
But the good news, maybe it's good news, maybe it's got yet more side effects, is that the SpaceX satellites are actually designed. They've got a lifespan of something like 6 years, which sounds pathetically short, if you ask me.
Yeah, it does.
But it's something like that. Maybe it's 10 years. I don't know. But they basically self-destruct by steering themselves into the atmosphere, where they burn up in the atmosphere. Allegedly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Allegedly harmlessly.
You're right.
But again, you know, there's these things are full of aluminum, and nobody's quite sure what the consequences are of several tons of vaporized aluminum in the upper atmosphere over, you know, which adds up over time.
Yeah, of course.
One of them did it once, wouldn't mean anything. But like, as opposed to a meteorite, which is iron and other things. But
question.
Yeah.
When did the first Starlink satellite go into orbit?
It's not very long ago.
I guess my question is, like, have we already seen a cycle of satellites that have allegedly self-destructed, and do we know what happened to them?
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like the quantity is significant enough to
see.
Any.
Okay.
This is all theoretical. This is just people raising potential concern. So maybe it's nothing. But it's the kind of thing we got to track, and you got to think about. I mean, we thought that dumping carbon in the atmosphere wasn't going to do anything, but at a certain point,
it's funny how that works. Second question: So we know that Elon Musk, like, this is his company. He initially funded it, but like, who is paying for it now, and how does he make money off of it?
So I believe it's simply paid for by SpaceX. I mean, this is, you know, and their investors, presumably, which is basically Elon Musk. So how does it make money? Well, it sells internet service. It's pretty expensive. You can go on their website. You can see a whole menu of prices. I think the cheapest is like 100 and some bucks a month, which is not so bad if you live in rural Kansas, and it's probably what you'd pay for broadband anyway. So that's actually a reasonable deal. And the price goes significantly higher for high volume operations, or if you're like on a yacht somewhere, you could be up to $1,000 a month that you're paying for this special service.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. But it's not outrageously out of line with what a lot of people in rural areas pay.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of these things that, like, it's fascinating. It's fascinating, but it does sort of raise these sort of like, you know, where are we going with technology kinds of questions. And, you know, it's futile to try to fight it because it's here and that's that. And I think we're going to have a reality, you know, in the future where when you sit back in a field in the dark, there's going to be dozens of things flying around above you forever. And that's kind of the world we're entering.
Yeah.
To say nothing of the drones that'll probably be flying around too, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Ooh. All right. Let's take another short break, and we will be right back with the conclusion of what we've learned about satellites today.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
All right, we have returned. Nick, this has been a real journey for me because I truly knew nothing about all of this. So
yeah.
I just want to say thank you for enlightening me. But what else do we need to know about these satellites?
Here's what we need to know. You know, I of all the wacky things, but all of the things that Elon Musk has done, you know, I would say this is probably one of the more positive.
As a whole,
I mean, yeah. as I raised, there's a number of potential issues.
Literal
and philosophical. But fundamentally, the issues are really what they come down to is just, you know, the inevitable advancement of technology. And of course, the word advancement implies positive. It is, you know, technology creates as many problems as it solves. But it does seem to be futile to fight it in many cases. So the real question is, how can this technology be put into place? How can the potential downsides be dealt with? And, you know, how do we evolve to live with it? You know, and keep it something that's achieving the promise of goodness that it allegedly pretends to deliver.
Well, I guess that goes back to the question that you raised initially at the beginning of the episode, which is like, what are the downsides with privatizing something that should ostensibly be in the public good? I'm researching for a different podcast. I'm researching the Benetton family of Italy, and I learned that in Italy, like, a lot of bridges and roadways have been privatized, and the Benetton family like owned this bridge in Genoa that collapsed a few years ago and killed like more than 40 people. And so then that led to a lot of like, not just like soul searching, but all, you know, just like there was no accountability.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that. It's a totally fundamental question. I mean, the classic argument is that private capital is way more efficient at delivering, you know, particularly new technology than the government. That's probably true when it comes to something like Starlink. You know, when it comes to something like, I don't know, basic water infrastructure, where privatizing it means that suddenly Nestle sells you water in plastic bottles.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
there
totally.
Significant downsides. There's been a lot of these examples. I know Spain privatized a lot of roads and bridges too. They did it in Chicago, the Chicago Skyway. Mostly it's short-term thinking by cities that are broke and need a shot in the arm. So they sell it for a one-time cash infusion, and then they have to, don't get the income for 100 years or whatever it is. So it's one of these, it's a very short-term way of thinking, and is probably bad in the long run. At the end of the day, we have to expect a certain amount of oversight and efficiency of our governments as well. And, you know, in this country, our infrastructure costs are like double what they are in comparable economies like Germany for a super complex litany of reasons, which you can read.
Yeah, totally.
The Atlantic did a great article recently on this. But, you know, so there is a balance there where, you know, for the most part, I think those things should be public goods. It's okay to involve the private sector, particularly with regards to the, you know, development of new technology. Roads and bridges is usually a little bit more of a gray area. Same thing with trains, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, here's another thing, too. It's like, and this is something that I just think about with Elon Musk in particular when I see what he did on X, you know, formerly Twitter, where, you know, someone said something that he didn't like or made fun of him or criticized him, and he would like shut down their account, or, you know, he's very vindictive. And so, you know, you could kind of see a world where someone does something he doesn't like and he just shuts off their Starlink access.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that's where that, to go back to the original point, you know, the more I think about it, the more I see internet access being, I don't know if you call that some kind of fundamental right, but it's certainly a public good. And at least that basic access, logically to me, seems like it falls into the public utility camp. Now, you can create totally. All kinds of private worlds on the internet.
Yes.
Twitter
yes.
or X, whatever it's called now.
Yes.
That is a private world. So I don't care if Elon Musk censors people on X.
Right, I mean, right.
You know, you see, yes. you've seen where the quality of dialogue has gone on that
yeah,
platform.
That's anyway. True. That's true. That's very true.
At this point. But, you know, that's not the internet. That's a private world on the internet. So anyway, you know, I would like to see some kind of public protection when it comes to just having the fundamental access.
Yeah.
And so that perhaps is a invitation to challenge the future of something like Starlink.
Mm. Well, Nick, like I said, this has been very enlightening. I feel like now I'm going to notice Starlink stuff everywhere and I'm going to look up in the sky. Yeah, I'm going to see it.
On a dark night, and you will eventually see, if not a satellite, quite possibly a string of satellites.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great to get to talk to you. I hear so much about you, obviously.
Probably too much.
So thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Love it.
And yeah. And just a reminder to our listeners, Too Much Money is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and Joe Piazza. Our music is by Lisa Brenner, and our network partner is Acast. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Like a Midas touch by the very first time, I make decisions with my wallet, not my mind.